By the time they had finished watering, the rain was over, and Caspian, with Eustace, the Pevensies, and Reepicheep, decided to walk up to the top of the hill and see what could be seen. It was a stiffish climb through coarse grass and heather, and they saw neither man nor beast, except seagulls. When they reached the top, they saw that it was a very small island, not more than 20 acres, and from this height the sea looked larger and more desolate than it did from the deck, or even the fighting top of the Dawn Treader. "Crazy, you know," said Eustace to Lucy in a low voice, looking at the eastern horizon. "Sailing on and on, into that, with no idea what we may get to." But he only said it out of habit, not really nastily, as he would have done at one time. It was too cold to stay long on the ridge, for the wind still blew freshly from the north. "Don't let's go back the same way," said Lucy as they turned. "Let's go along a bit and come down by the other stream, the one Drinian wanted to go to." Everyone agreed to this, and after about 15 minutes they were at the source of the second river. It was a more interesting place than they had expected. A deep little mountain lake, surrounded by cliffs except for a narrow channel on the seaward side out of which the water flowed. Here, at last, they were out of the wind, and all sat down in the heather above the cliff for a rest. All sat down, but one, it was Edmund, jumped up again very quickly. "They go in for sharp stones on this island," he said, groping about in the heather. "Where is the wretched thing? Ah, now I've got it. Hello! It wasn't a stone at all. It's a sword hilt. No, by Jove, it's a whole sword. What the rust has left of it, it must have lain here for ages." "Narnian, too, by the look of it," said Caspian, as they all crowded round. "I'm sitting on something, too," said Lucy. "Something hard." It turned out to be the remains of a male shirt. By this time everyone was on hands and knees, feeling in the thick heather in every direction. Their search revealed, one by one, a helmet, a dagger, and a few coins. Not Calorman crescents, but genuine Narnian lions and trees, such as you might see any day in the marketplace of Beaversdam or Baruna. "Looks as if this might be all that's left of one of our seven lords," said Edmund. "Just what I was thinking," said Caspian. "I wonder which it was. There's nothing on the dagger to show. And I wonder how he died." "And how we are to avenge him," added Reepicheep. Edmund, the only one of the party who had read several detective stories, had meanwhile been thinking. "Look here," he said, "there's something very fishy about this. He can't have been killed in a fight." "Why not?" asked Caspian. "No bones," said Edmund. "An enemy might take the armor and leave the body, but who ever heard of a chap who'd want to fight carrying away the body and leaving the armor?" "Perhaps he was killed by a wild animal," Lucy suggested. "It'd be a clever animal," said Edmund, "that would take a man's male shirt off." "That's for sure." "Perhaps a dragon," said Caspian. "Nothing doing," said Eustace. "A dragon couldn't do it. I ought to know." "Well, let's get away from the place anyway," said Lucy. She had not felt like sitting down again since Edmund had raised the question of bones. "If you like," said Caspian, getting up. "I don't think any of this stuff is worth taking away." They came down and round to the little opening where the stream came out of the lake, and stood looking at the deep water within the circle of cliffs. If it had been a hot day, no doubt some would have been tempted to bathe, and everyone would have had a drink. Indeed, even as it was, Eustace was on the very point of stooping down and scooping up some water in his hands, when Reepicheep and Lucy both at the same moment cried, "Look!" So he forgot about his drink, and looked into the water. The bottom of the pool was made of large, grayish-blue stones, and the water was perfectly clear, and on the bottom lay a life-size figure of a man, made apparently of gold. It lay face downward with its arm stretched out above its head, and it so happened that as they looked at it, the clouds parted and the sun shone out. The golden shape was lit up from end to end. Lucy thought it was the most beautiful statue she had ever seen. "Well," whistled Caspian, "that was worth coming to see. I wonder, can we get it out?" "We can dive for it, sire," said Reepicheep. "No good at all," said Edmund. "At least, if it's really gold, solid gold, it'll be far too heavy to bring up, and that pool's 12 or 15 feet deep if it's an inch. Half a moment, though. It's a good thing I've brought a hunting spear with me. Let's see what the depth is like. Hold on to my hand, Caspian, while I lean out over the water a bit." Caspian took his hand, and Edmund, leaning forward, began to lower his spear into the water. Before it was halfway in, Lucy said, "I don't believe the statue is gold at all. It's only the light. Your spear looks just the same color." "What's wrong?" asked several voices at once, for Edmund had suddenly let go of the spear. "I couldn't hold it," gasped Edmund. "It seemed so heavy." "And there it is on the bottom now," said Caspian, "and Lucy is right. It looks just the same color as the statue." But Edmund, who appeared to be having some trouble with his boots, at least he was bending down and looking at them, straightened himself all at once and shouted out in the sharp voice which people hardly ever disobey, "Get back! Back from the water! All of you, at once!" They all did, and stared at him. "Look," said Edmund, "look at the toes of my boots."
"They look a bit yellow," began Eustace.
"They're gold, solid gold," interrupted Edmund. "Look at them, feel them. The leather's pulled away from it already, and they're as heavy as lead."
"By Aslan," said Caspian, "you don't mean to say—"
"Yes, I do," said Edmund. "That water turns things into gold. It turned the spear into gold. That's why it got so heavy. And it was just lapping against my feet. It's a good thing I wasn't barefoot. And it turned the toe caps into gold. And that poor fellow on the bottom, well, you see—"
"So it isn't a statue at all," said Lucy, in a low voice.
"No, the whole thing is plain now. He was here on a hot day. He undressed on top of the cliff, where we were sitting. The clothes have rotted away or been taken by birds to line nests with. The armor's still there. Then he dived, and—"
"Don't," said Lucy. "What a horrible thing."
"And what a narrow shave we've had," said Edmund.
"Narrow indeed," said Rinkecheep. "Anyone's finger, anyone's foot, anyone's whisker, or anyone's tail might have slipped into the water at any moment."
"All the same," said Caspian, "we may as well test it." He stooped down and wrenched up a spray of heather. Then very cautiously he knelt beside the pool and dipped it in. It was heather that he dipped. What he drew out was a perfect model of heather, made of the purest gold, heavy and soft as lead. "The king who owned this island," said Caspian slowly, and his face flushed as he spoke, "would soon be the richest of all kings in the world. I claim this land forever as a Narnian possession. It shall be called Goldwater Island, and I bind all of you to secrecy. No one must know of this, not even Drinian, on pain of death, do you hear?"
"Who are you talking to?" said Edmund. "I'm no subject of yours. If anything, it's the other way round. I am one of the four ancient sovereigns of Narnia, and you are under allegiance to the High King, my brother."
"So it has come to that, King Edmund, has it?" said Caspian, laying his hand on his sword-hilt.
"Oh, stop it, both of you," said Lucy. "That's the worst of doing anything with boys. You're all such swaggering, bullying idiots. Oh!"
Her voice died away into a gasp, and everyone else saw what she had seen. Across the grey hillside above them—grey, for the heather was not yet in bloom—without noise, and without looking at them, and shining as if he were in bright sunlight, though the sun had in fact gone in, passed with slow pace the hugest lion that human eyes have ever seen. In describing the scene, Lucy said afterward, "He was the size of an elephant," though at another time she only said, "the size of a cart-horse." But it was not the size that mattered. Nobody dared to ask what it was. They knew it was Aslan. And nobody ever saw how or where he went. They looked at one another like people waking from sleep. "What were we talking about?" said Caspian. "Have I been making rather an ass of myself?"
"Sire," said Rinkecheep, "this is a place with a curse on it. Let us get back on board at once. And if I might have the honor of naming this island, I should call it Death Water."
"That strikes me as a very good name, Reep," said Caspian, "though now that I come to think of it, I don't know why. But the weather seems to be settling, and I dare say Drinian would like to be off. What a lot we shall have to tell him." But in fact, they had not much to tell, for the memory of the last hour had become all confused. "Their Majesties all seem a bit bewitched when they came aboard," said Drinian to Rince some hours later, when the Dawn Treader was once more under sail, and Deathwater Island already below the horizon. Something happened to them in that place. The only thing I could get clear was that they think they found the body of one of those lords we're looking for.
"You don't say so, Captain," answered Rince. "Well, that's three. Only four more. At this rate, we might be home soon after the new year. And a good thing, too. My baccy's running a bit low. Good night, sir."